National Broadcasting Company present, transcribed, Sir Ralph Richardson in Theatre Royal.
This is Ralph Richardson. This week, we turn to Lawrence Stern's famous novel, Tristram Shandy. The literature of England is rich in lovable eccentrics, but none more lovable, if not more eccentric, than Lawrence Stern's Uncle Toby. Most of us are familiar with the old soldier who lives again in memory the battles and sieges of his earlier days, and such was Tristram Shandy's Uncle Toby, a veteran of the campaigns of Marlborough, 200 and more years ago. I myself will play the role of Toby, and James McKechnie, as Tristram, will relate these scenes from Tristram Shandy, which we have called My Uncle Toby.
I verily believe that a man might walk from Dan to Beersheba, were he in the walking mood, ere he met up with a worthier or more amiable man than my Uncle Toby. And though my uncle may have taken upon him to ride somewhat upon his hobby horse, can I think any the less of him for that? Nay, if it come to that, sir, have not the wisest men in all ages, not excepting Solomon himself, have they not had their hobby horses too? It had been my Uncle Toby's fortune to serve his king, not without honor, in the late wars in Flanders. And it was only by reason of the wound in his groin that he received at the siege of Namur, rendering him unfit for further service, that my Uncle Toby became possessed of his hobby horse at all. For, back in London, the wound confined him 4 years to his bed.
Come in, brother. I'm not asleep.
I met with a friend of ours in the street, brother, and he inquired how you did. I took the liberty of inviting him up to see for himself.
Why, sir, you're heartily welcome. Come in, I pray.
I'm happy to find you so cheerful, sir. Your brother gave me sad news of your wound.
Oh, well, a man must bear cheerfully what the Lord sends him. At least my wound has brought me the leisure to peruse my studies.
Ah, and what might those be, Captain Shandy? Philosophy?
Oh, I leave philosophy to my brother, sir. No, I've been engaged upon the study of projectiles and fortification, which are, of all the studies we know, perhaps the most generally neglected.
That I can well believe.
But none the less interesting for that. Indeed, I find much in the study to console me. Until Tartaglia proved to the contrary, I'd honestly believe that the cannonball which did me this mischief had followed a right line.
Was it a cannonball which gave you your wound, then?
It was a coping stone broke off by a cannonball from the parapet of a hornwork before the gate of St. Nicholas, in one of the traverses of a trench opposite to the salient angle of the demi-bastion of St. Roch at Namur.
And this was at the siege of Namur, Captain Shandy.
If you'll do me the kindness to reach me the map there on the table behind you, I can make the whole thing plain to you. Now, as you can plainly see, before the gate of St. Nicholas, which lies here, the counterscarp, which extends itself from the bank of the Mars, quite up the great water stop, lies over ground which is cut and cross-cut with a multitude.
To speak the truth, unless the company my father led upstairs were tolerably clear-headed, it was a difficult thing for my Uncle Toby, do what he could, to keep the discourse free from obscurity. even with a map to aid him, it was not always possible for him to find his way among so many obstacles. Often enough, he would get so sadly bewildered and set fast among them that he could get neither backwards or forwards to save his life, and was oft times obliged to give up the attempt upon that very account. This fact could scarcely be lost upon his servant, Corporal Trim, who waited upon him and served him with great fidelity and affection.
If I durst presume to give your honor my advice and speak my opinion in this matter...
Thou art welcome, Trim. Speak what thou thinkest upon the subject, man, without fear.
Why then, I think, with humble submission to your honor's better judgment, that these ravelins, bastions, curtains, and hornworks make but a poor, contemptible, fiddle-faddle piece of it here upon paper, compared to what your honor and I could make of it were we in the country by ourselves, and had but a rood and a half of ground to do what we pleased with.
Well, there's my house in Yorkshire, Trim, with a bowling green at the bottom of the garden.
Well, then, a summer is coming on. Your honour might sit out of doors and give me the nography.
No, you must call it the ichnography, Trim.
The ichnography of the town or citadel, either of Namur or any other your honour was pleased to sit down before. And I'll be shot by your honour upon the glacé of it if I did not fortify it to your honour's mind.
I dare say thou wouldst, Trim.
For if your honour could but mark me the polygon with its exact lines and angles...
That I could do very well.
I will begin with a foss. And if your honour could tell me the proper depth and breadth...
I can to a hair's breadth.
I would throw out the earth upon this hand towards the town for the scarp, and on that hand towards the campaign for the counterscarp.
Very right, Trim.
And when I had sloped them to your mind, and please your honour, I would face the glacé with sods, as are the finest fortification in all Flanders.
The best engineers call them gazons, Trim.
Oh, your honour understands these matters better than any officer in His Majesty's service. Now let us but go into the country... I would work under your honour's directions like a horse and make fortifications that it would be worth all the world's riding 20 miles to see them.
Say no more, Trim.
Besides, your honour would get not only pleasure and good pastime, but good air and good exercise and good health. And your honour's wound would be well in a month.
Thou hast said enough, Trim. I like thy project mightily.
And if your honour pleases, I'll this moment go and buy a pioneer spade to take down with us, and I'll bespeak a shovel and a pickaxe and a couple...
Say no more, Trim. There's a guinea for thee. There's a guinea. Go down, my lad. Bring my supper up this instant. We shall set out for the country within the week.
Never did lover post down to a beloved mistress with more heat and expectation than my Uncle Toby did, to enjoy this wondrous plan within the privacy of his bowling green, which lay beyond a yew tree hedge at the bottom of the garden beside his little cottage in Yorkshire. And so it was that his wound was healed, and he exchanged his bed of suffering for the most rewarding of hobby horses. And so long as a man rides a hobby horse peaceably and quietly along the king's highway, and neither compels you nor me to get up behind him, pray, sir, what have either you or I to do with it?
I think thou hast better sharpen the salience a trifle, Trim, and level it off at the foot of the glacis.
As your honour says.
I wonder, Trim, whether we've not made the breach an inch too narrow by yesterday's account of the matter.
Yeah, I was wondering much the same thing, your honour. Have I your honour's permission to widen it by an inch?
I wouldn't for the world, Trim, have thee think that I set too favourable a construction on the account. But if a line be fairly drawn from the centre of the ravelin to the northern end of the bastion, as the Gazette directs that it should be drawn...
Your honour is in the right.
Then let us not lag behind his grace, Trim. Widen the breach by a single inch, and the matter is set to rights.
As your honour says. Does your honour think that the town will fall by the end of the week?
I have a premonition that it will do so, Trim, just as Amberg, Bonn, Rheinberg, and Huey fell before it. But the post will be in by the dinner hour.
With submission to your honour, if we should have the carpenter build us a little model of a town, to be run up together of slit deals and then painted, and we've clapped it within the interior polygon.
Built exactly after the pattern of those in Flanders trim.
With grated windows and the gable ends of the houses facing the streets.
Only not to have the houses run up together, Trim, but to have every house independent, to hook on or off, so as to form into a plan of whatever town we please.
Your Honor has hit the nail on the head.
Then run and fetch me the carpenter, Trim. We've no time to lose. Oh, but stay, stay. Here comes the Gazette from the post office.
Good day to Your Honor.
Good day to you, Susanna. Wait, Trim, wait till I've read the dispatch. Trim, take that mattock. Batter down the face of the West Bastion.
Right, Your Honor. Tis done, Your Honor. Even as Your Honor supposed last night.
Give me the colors, Trim. Help me up onto the ramparts. By heaven, the town has fallen.
My father was a philosopher in grain, speculative, systematical. For the character of my Uncle Toby, he had nothing but the warmest and fondest affection. But for my Uncle Toby's hobby horse, he had no real respect. The contrariety of their humors, in fact, was occasionally the source of a fraternal squabble.
From what you tell me, brother, the noble science of fortification has its weak side as well as others.
You're right, brother, but when a ravelin stands before a curtain, it is a ravelin. But when a ravelin stands before a bastion, then the ravelin is not a ravelin, it is a half moon.
Brother Toby, you would provoke a saint. There was I trying to explain to you a matter of the gravest import. And here have you got us, I know not how, souse into the middle of the old subject again. I wish the whole science of fortification with all its inventors at the devil. It's been the death of thousands, and it'll be mine in the end. I would not, Brother Toby, have my brain so full of saps, mines, blinds, gabions, palisados, ravelins, half-moons, and such trumpery to be proprietor of Namur and of all the towns of Flanders with it.
I need not tell the listener that a man's hobby horse is as tender a part as he has about him. But my Uncle Toby was a man patient of injuries. Pray, sir, what said he? How did he behave? Oh, sir, it was great. He merely looked up at my father with a countenance spread over with so much good nature, so placid, so fraternal, that my father was touched to the heart.
Brother Toby, I beg thy pardon. Forgive, I pray thee, this rash humor which my mother gave me.
My dear, dear brother, thou art heartily welcome to it had it been 10 times as much, brother.
But it's ungenerous to hurt any man. A brother worse, but to hurt a brother of such gentle manner, so unprovoking and so unresenting, it's base. By heaven, it's cowardly.
You are heartily welcome, brother, had it been 50 times as much.
Besides, what have I to do, my dear Toby, either with your amusements or your pleasures, unless it was in my power, which is not, to increase their measure?
Brother Shandy, you are much mistaken on this point, for you do increase my pleasure very much in begetting children for the Shandy family at your time of life.
Oh, it's not worth talking of.
In a moment, we continue Theatre Royal, starring Sir Ralph Richardson.
News is a necessity in this fast-moving world of ours, and NBC fills that need by bringing you complete coverage of all the latest news throughout the week. Monday through Friday on NBC, you'll hear such outstanding reporters and commentators as John Cameron Swayze, Alex Dreyer, David Brinkley, Morgan Beatty, Pauline Frederick, and many others. And on weekends, there's a series of widely acclaimed panel programs bringing you the people who make the headlines. There's Meet the Press, Youth Wants to Know, American Forum of the Air, just to mention a few. It's the best in news coverage. And speaking of news programs, here's a word about an NBC feature you may not be familiar with. It's called Weekend, And it's brought to you each Sunday afternoon, a two-hour radio newspaper from front-page stories to fashion and society news, reported by Leon Pearson, Tex and Jinx McCrary, Merrill Muller, and many other expert newsmen and women. Weekend is unique in the field of radio reporting. Try it this Sunday.
We now continue Theatre Royal, starring Sir Ralph Richardson.
The time has now arrived when I must begin the story of my Uncle Toby's amours. For having given a picture of that bowling green wherein my Uncle Toby's campaigns were fought, I must acquaint you that it lay cheek by jowl with the garden of a house next door. And it was in that selfsame house that the widow Wadman lived. Now, just as my Uncle Toby had set his heart upon the conquest of all Flanders, so had the widow Wadman set her heart upon the conquest of my Uncle Toby. Only occasion was wanting, and occasion came one day upon the conclusion of the peace and the signing of the Treaty of Utrecht. It was a sad day for my Uncle Toby when the terms of the Treaty of Utrecht were made public and the whole fortifications and harbour of Dunkirk had to be demolished according to stipulation. For after them, what would be left round which a mettlesome hobby horse could lead in?
Shall I begin the demolitions by making a breach in the ramparts, Your Honour?
Nay, that'll never do, Corporal. In going that way to work in the town, the English garrison will not be safe in it for an hour. Because if the French were treacherous...
Oh, they are as treacherous as devils, and please, Your Honor.
It gives me concern always when I hear it, Trim, that they don't want personal bravery. But if a breach is made in the ramparts, they may enter it and make themselves masters of the place when they please.
Well, let them enter it, and please, Your Honor, if they dare.
In cases like this, Trim, it's no part of the consideration of the commandant what the enemy dare or what they dare not do. He must act with prudence. Now, we'll begin with the outworks, both towards the sea and the land, and particularly with Fort Louis, the most distant of them all, and we'll demolish it first. And then the rest, one by one, both on our right and as our left, as we retreat towards the town. Then we'll demolish the mole. Next, fill up the harbour, then retire into the citadel and blow it up in the air. And having done that, Corporal, we'll embark for England.
We're there already, Your Honor.
Oh, very true, Trim. For yonder I see the spire of our village church. Hey-oh.
Ever since Your Honor first read me the terms of the stipulation, I have never once whistled or sung or laughed or cried or talked of past done deeds or told Your Honor one story, good or bad.
Thou hast many excellencies, Trim, and I hold it not the least of them, as thou happens to be a storyteller, that of the number thou hast told me, either to amuse me in my painful hours or to divert me in my grave ones, thou hast seldom told me a bad one.
Because, and please Your Honor, except one of a king of Bohemia and his seven castles, they're all true, for they're about myself.
I don't like the subject the worst, Trim, on that score. But, prithee, what is this story thou hast excited my curiosity?
Well, I'll tell it to Your Honor directly.
Provided, Trim, provided it's not a merry one. Not today.
Oh, it is not a merry one by any means, Your Honor.
No, but I have it altogether, a grave one.
Well, it is neither the one nor the other, but will suit Your Honor exactly.
Then I'll thank thee for it with all my heart. So, prithee, begin it, Trim.
Yeah. The story of the King of Bohemia and his seven castles. There was a certain King of Bohemia...
Oh, don't leave off thy cap, Trim. The sun's too hot upon thy head.
Oh, it was out of respect, Your Honor.
Oh, well, then put it on, Trim. I know thou hast an honest nature.
Oh, God bless thy honor. there was a certain King of Bohemia, but in whose reign, except his own, I'm not able to inform, Your Honor.
I don't desire the orbit, Trim, by any means. I wouldn't give thee a halfpenny for it.
Well, only in it, please, Your Honor, it makes a story look better in the face.
Well, then take any date out of the whole world thou choosest, Trim. Thou art heartily welcome.
Your Honor. Now, in the year of our Lord, 1712, there was, and it please Your Honor...
Oh, nay, Trim, no, I'll tell thee truly, any other date would have pleased me better. on account of the sad stain upon our history that year in marching off our troops and refusing to cover the siege of Quesnoy. Oh. Therefore, I would advise thee that ever thou tellest that story again...
If I live, and please your honor, but once to get through the story, I never will tell it
again. Oh, tut, tut, Trim. Begin again.
Yeah, well, there was, and please your honor, a certain unfortunate king of Bohemia.
Was he unfortunate, then?
The king of Bohemia, and please your honor, was unfortunate in this, that being fond of navigation, and there happening throughout the whole of the kingdom of Bohemia to be no seaport town whatever...
But how the deuce should there be, Trim? For Bohemia being totally inland, it could have happened no otherwise.
Your honor is in the right. Now, the king of Bohemia, with his queen and the courtiers, happening one fine summer's evening to walk out...
There's that word, happening. Oh, it's so right, Trim. For the king of Bohemia and his queen might have walked out, or they might have let it alone.
Good King William was of an opinion, and please your honor, that everything was predestined for us in this world, insomuch as he would often say to his soldiers that every bullet had its billet.
Oh, it was a great man, Trim.
And I believe to this day that the shot which wounded me in the knee at Landen did so for no other purpose than to take me out of King William's service and place me in your honors.
It shall never be construed otherwise, Trim.
What was the truth about the King of Bohemia and his seven castles, we shall never know, because my Uncle Toby sent Trim upon an errand before he could ever explain the matter. But the corporal had had a larger audience for his tale than he supposed, for listening to him behind the hedge was the Widow Wadman. And no sooner had Trim retired from the field than the Widow Wadman advanced upon it. Nor was it Dunkirk against which her batteries were to be turned. The defenses that she sought to demolish were my Uncle Toby's.
Oh, Captain Shandy, how fortunate to find you here.
Your servant, ma'am.
I'm half distracted, Captain Shandy. A mote or sand or something, I know not what, has got into this eye of mine. Do look into it. It is not in the white.
Why, ma'am, upon my honor, I...
Perhaps if I were to squeeze into the sentry box with you and sit down, you might be able more easily to see it.
But I protest, ma'am, I can see nothing whatever in your eye.
Nothing, Captain Shandy? Oh, but it is not in the white.
But, madam, I can see nothing there at all.
Nothing? Captain Shandy...
Now, of all the eyes that were ever created, there never was an eye among them all so fitted to rob my Uncle Toby of his repose as the very eye at which he was looking. 'Twas an eye full of gentle salutations and soft responses, speaking not like the trumpet, but whispering soft, like the last low accent of an expiring saint. How can you live comfortless, Captain Shandy, and alone, without a bosom to lean your head on or trust your cares unto? It was an eye that... But I shall be in love with it myself if I say another word about it. It did my Uncle Toby's business.
In love? But your honor was very well the day before yesterday, when I was telling your honor the story of the King of Bohemia and his seven castles.
The King of Bohemia? What became of that story, Trim?
We lost it, and please your honor. But your honor was as free from love then as I am.
It was just while they went off with the wheelbarrow, Trim.
But who, and please you, is your honor in love with?
With Mistress Wadman, Trim. She's left a bullet here in my breast.
Why, and please your honor, she can no more stand a siege than she can fly.
But as we're neighbors, Trim, the best way, I think, is to let her know of it civilly first.
Now, if I might presume to differ from your honor...
Well, why else should I talk to thee, Trim?
Then I would begin, and please your honor, with making a good thundering attack upon her in return and telling her civilly afterwards. For if she knows anything of your honor's being in love beforehand...
Lord help her. She knows no more at present, Trim, than a child unborn.
Precious souls. The widow Wadman had told it, with all its circumstances, to Mistress Bridget 24 hours before. Bridget had told it over the garden wall to Susanna, who had in turn told it to my mother, who told my father, while Obadiah had spread the whole of it throughout the village. In fact, the last in the whole parish to know about it was my Uncle Toby himself. And so, in due time, the attack was launched. Corporal Trim had arrayed himself in his regimentals. A whiff of military pride had puffed out his shirt at the wrist, and from it, by a tassel, hung the corporal's stick. My Uncle Toby carried his cane like a pike.
Captain Shandy to see you, madam.
Why, Captain, what a surprise, I declare. Pray sit down.
Madam, I am in love. With you, madam.
Yes, Captain Shandy. The cares and disquietudes of the marriage state are very great.
I suppose so, madam. I suppose so.
And therefore, when a person is so much at ease as you are, Captain Shandy, so happy in yourself, your friends, and your amusements, I wonder what reasons can incline him to the state.
They are written in the common prayer book.
I often think of the pain that you must have suffered from your wound, Captain Shandy. It was in the wars you received it, I believe.
At Namur, madam. It was from a coping stone, broke off by a cannonball from the parapet of a hornwork before the gate of St. Nicholas.
A coping stone? Oh, it must have been very painful. And whereabouts exactly did you receive this sad blow, Captain Shandy?
You shall see the very place, madam.
Oh, Captain Shandy, but are you, do you...
I'll show you the very place, madam.
Oh!
Trim! Your Honor, Mistress Wadman desires to see the place where I received my wound. Bring me my map of Namur.
Dear, dear Uncle Toby, what was thy final understanding of the sex? What was the final outcome of thy passion? Whether thou fellst a victim to the sweet, bright eyes of a woman who had withstood so staunchly the fury of foot, horse, and artillery, that is a story we shall never know. For it is just another story of the King of Bohemia and his seven castles. One thing alone is certain, that thy benignant shade still haunts a bowling green in England, and that thy shade is accompanied, as was thy cheerful figure in life, by an ever faithful, ever loving Trim.